With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and today I got one of the most well-known, well-traveled wrestlers who you've probably never heard of. He's known everywhere in the world, but right here in North America. I'm talking about Rebel Starbuck, Mike Mahalati. We go way back, all the way to Calgary, early 90s, where I gave him his first pair of wrestling boots and apparently even loaned him some tights for his first ever match against Lance Storm. You hear both those stories. Starbuck's also talking about meeting Stu Hart, actually accosting him at his house, training with Lance Storm, why he went to Europe to get his wrestling career started, what Japan and the Japanese buzzsaw Tajiri did for his career. He was Tajiri's top rival in his promotion a few years ago. Mike also started wrestling in Finland. He started the whole wrestling business in Finland, basically, and in most of Europe. He's well known, like I said, and he's a promoter now and launching Slam Wrestling in Finland. He'll tell us all about the upcoming Mega Launch event in Helsinki on March 22nd and what it's like to be the promoter of the show. If you live in Finland, go check out Mega Launch. You must see it in Helsinki on March 22nd. But let's get started with the most popular wrestler that you've never heard of, but you will by the time we're done here, all the way from Helsinki, Finland, my fellow Canadian by way of Finland. It's the Rebel Starbuck right here on Talk is Jericho.
Hey, Fabio Ferrari, I heard you say that we're a bunch of losers in Finland because we lost the war. I heard you say that our Formula One drivers suck. And I heard you say that you think that we're a bunch of losers that got no heart and got no soul. Well, I got news for you, buddy. This is the Rebel Starbuck talking to you. And I'm telling you that when you come to Finland on the 22nd of March for Slam Wrestling Finland Mega Launch, you're going to step into the ring against the pioneer of Finnish professional wrestling. I'm going to show you what Finnish sisu is all about. And besides, you guys in Italy, you live with your mothers, which is pretty damn pathetic. Because we in Finland, we as grown men, we don't live with our moms. Actually here, we got something called boom boom.
Okay, so I've been wrestling for a long time, as everyone knows, close to 30 years now, believe it or not. And I've seen and met most of the guys around the world with worldwide influence, and everybody had an interesting start and a different way of getting into things. But today it's very interesting for me because Rebel Starbuck is here, Mike Mahalati, who is probably, and I'm saying this with utmost respect, Mike, and you can tell me if you agree with this, the most well-traveled, most well-known wrestler that nobody really knows in North America.
That's actually funny. You know, well, the thing is that, I mean, with the internet now blowing in everything wide open, it's if people follow the wrestling business, it seems like they follow it pretty selectively. Mm-hmm. The thing is that, yeah, I mean, I've been all around the world. It's, I mean, this spring now, like next month, it'll be 22 countries, four continents, you know, and I've headlined pretty much most places I've been. I've been a top guy for the companies I worked for. I've been a champion here, there, and everywhere. But yeah, it's weird. It's weird that like people don't know, like they don't follow the European scene, maybe over in America and stuff. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, not my problem, I guess, but yeah, it would be nice if people knew.
Well, no, but like I said, I mean, that there are certain guys like that. I mean, I was pretty much like that until I broke into the States, you know, probably 96, I think, probably when I got to WCW. But I think a lot of people, like you said, very selective, don't understand that there's a whole scene outside of North America and Japan that's situated mostly in Europe. And your book that you just released, Battleground Valhalla, explains it all. But basically, you're the guy who brought pro wrestling into the Nordic countries of Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, those type of places.
Well, the thing is, you know, there were some guys that were like trying to get stuff off, you know, up and running off the ground. It was very much in its, how could you say, its infancy.
Right.
Still back in, let's say, the early part of the 2000s. It had been around in Norway, I guess, like for about a year before that, let's say 2002-ish, or I think it was that they started there. It was pretty much like it's virgin territory up here, you know, this part of the ass end of the world, I call it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're up the literal Timbuktu of the globe. And like for anything to happen up here is really a rather significant. I think that's one of the main things that made me a star in Japan is that Tajiri, he brought me over to Japan and he marketed me as, you know, this guy from an exotic country that like nobody would expect pro wrestling to come from. And that was the catch. That was the thing that like people caught on to. So what? There's wrestling in Finland, the home of Santa Claus? Well, yeah, there is.
Well, and the thing is too, like wrestling in the WWE for almost 20 years, we went to Finland one time and you were there. I remember seeing you there. And never been to Denmark, never been to Sweden, never been to Norway. And there might have been a few of those shows, a few shows in those countries here and there. But even WWE is not even very well known or very well traveled in those countries.
Well, the thing is, it's really hard because, like, I'll tell you what, right now, on May 10th of this year, SmackDown is coming to Helsinki again after a 10-year absence.
Wow.
Yeah, and Live Nation got a hold of WWE, and they said, listen, you know, we got to market this thing because all they got here is YouTube and the network, right? So they're not on TV. They haven't been on TV for 10 years, like on any public access channels. I commentated WWE on Eurosport. That's a television channel here. Mm-hmm. It's like a pay TV channel from 2009 all the way to 2015. So it was a 6-year run, and I was the main commentator for that. That was pay TV, though. But now they haven't been on national television, like free television, for 10 years. Now they're coming back, and they got a hold of me, and they said, listen, we'd like you to be like the special guest ambassador for this whole thing, because like in the country of Finland, if anybody has anything to say about pro wrestling, they know that Starbucks is a very integral part of that. I'm like, it's my name is synonymous with pro wrestling in this country. Mm-hmm. So they got a hold of me, and I guess because I know like Dave Finlay and I know Robbie Brookside and I know Steve Corino, I dropped some names and I said, well, just ask these guys for a reference. And, you know, if they're cool with it, if they want to go with it, then yeah, I'm up for it. Right. And they got a hold of me. They said, yeah, they got the green light from WWE. And so now they're coming back and their marketing department called me from the UK. And this was like over a week ago. And they said, listen, we're having like real troubles with the Nordics. Like all of the Nordics. And we can't seem to crack that market. Do you like, what would you give us like as advice? Who should we talk to? Like, how should we market it? How should we pitch it to these different channels and different companies? And I gave them my my 2 cents worth. And I told them what I thought they should do. And then they came, they were here on Tuesday and made their pitches. So let's see what happens.
Well, I mean, and that's another thing too, and also before we continue forward, and we'll get into this, you started in Calgary where I started, so you have kind of really done a great job at being a jack of all trades, and it's something you talk about in your book, and it's something that even Vince McMahon taught me years ago. There's no job too big or too small, whether it's wrestling or whatever it is you're doing, and even he'd make a big point of like picking up a piece of garbage on the floor in front of everybody during a team meeting and going, no job too big or too small. And the more jobs you learn, the more diversity and more worth that you have. And you also do that in wrestling as well, from, like you mentioned, wrestling, commentating, voiceover work for the ads for your shows, promoting, training. You've done a little bit of all those things.
Yeah, booking. Yeah.
Booking as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that it's like, I've often said that pro wrestling, I mean, you know, I guess if you want to consider it as a sport, but, you know, for me it is, right? I mean, what I do in the ring, at least, it feels like it's, you know, I'm beating myself to death in there and I'm hopefully beating the other guy too. But anyway, the point being that I mean, you got to have that professional pride, right? So you want, I mean, and the thing is that I've never loved any other sport. I don't give a rat's ass about MMA. I'll be honest with you. I don't. I've commentated MMA before, and I've also been a ring announcer for MMA. I've been a ring announcer for boxing, and I do the ring announcing even now in Estonia for the boxing there. And the thing is that it's just a job. Right. That's all it is. It's not a passion. I have a voice and I parlay that voice to make money. But for me, pro wrestling has been my wife, my mistress, my bitch since day one. It's since day one, man. And for me, that's the only thing that I ever cared about, which is why now at the age of 45, I find myself starting my own wrestling company from scratch.
Right. And we talked about that. You have your first match, I guess your first event, Slam Wrestling, the mega launch.
Yeah. It's actually my second event. The first event was for the company that built my ring, because my ring is sponsored, man. I had a metal industry company. I have a friend there who's one of the foremen, and they sponsored my ring 100%. And for them, I did the first show. I brought in James Mason from the UK. I brought in Natalia Markova from Russia. One girl called Helena Sixth from Sweden and some other local Finnish guys. And we put on a show for their, they call them little Christmas parties. It's like a pre-Christmas party. All the companies do them here. And for this year, for this company called PowerTech Group, we did this little Christmas party, and we had 5 wrestling matches on the show. And that was like the maiden voyage. But this now, the mega launch event for Slam Wrestling Finland, 22nd of March in Helsinki at this place called The Circus. It's like a huge nightclub downtown. Holds about 1,700, I believe, that's the official like media mega launch. Like that's where I put my name on the map in front of the Finnish media, in front of the country.
So how is it for you? Like I know for me doing the Rock and Wrestling Rage of the cruise, and the last thing I ever wanted to be was a promoter. Cause now, you know, I'm dealing with so-and-so wants more money. This guy wants this, that guy wants that. And, you know, it's my project, it's my baby, so I have to kind of get into those things. You've been doing this a long time, as have I, and promoters are the one thing that promotions I never thought I'd really want to do. How do you like being on that side of the coin?
Well, you know what? The thing is that I ran the local wrestling business in Finland as a sports club entity that's like nonprofit organization where it's like, you know, but I ran it for 9 years. And the thing is that I was the guy that, you know, did all the dealings and brought in the foreign talent and hooked everybody up and did the booking and all this crap. And the thing is that during that time, it's like, you know, I did my tour of duty in that area. But the thing is that because it was a nonprofit organization, I wasn't able to like turn it into a business. And the thing is that I think, you know, I'm wise in hindsight that I understand the reasons now why I couldn't do it, which is there are things that I can fix now with my own company, Slam Wrestling Finland. But that said, I mean, at the age of 45, I mean, you're 48, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. At the age of 45, I look at myself and, you know, none of us are immortal. None of us are going to like, you know, just, we're not going to lace the boots up forever. Mm-hmm. But like I said, my heart doesn't burn for any other like trade, like at this level. I mean, I still want to be part of wrestling because I breathe this. It's like it's been part of me since I was young. And that's where like you think of how can you parlay your talent. I remember this Hall of Fame speech like a few years ago when they inducted that Arnold Schwarzenegger into the WWE Hall of Fame, and then they brought Triple H into that Arnold Sports Hall of Fame.
Right.
And they did these pieces with Michael Cole, and I remember that Arnold said when he's talking about Triple H that, you know, and he was like pretty much cross-referencing himself when he was talking. He was saying that, like, what do you do with your celebrity status? You know, once you achieve a certain level of celebrity, what is it that you do with that? Because the thing is, you have an opportunity to make that thing grow and to actually like expand your borders, so to speak, so that you could actually go and make like a further living or more money or whatever down the line by branching off and maybe like ricocheting into a different direction, maybe a direction that you didn't like foresee previously. Like with you, it's been like you've done the books. So you're an author, you're a podcast guy, right? So you run your own podcast. You've been on Broadway, you've done this stuff, you know, and and the TV series and stuff like that. So you've done that exact same thing too.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, and you know, to kind of go back here, and I say this, I remember Black Magic, Norman Smiley, a good friend of mine, he now works in the WBPC, and I helped him get a gig in there, because back in the day when it was my chance to make a name for myself in Mexico, he went above and beyond to do that. And we had a conversation a couple of years ago where he was laughing. He said, you know, if you would have ever told me at that point in time that this guy right here, Corazon de Leon, was going to be a world champion and, you know, WrestleMania headliner and all this stuff, I would have went, this guy? Him? Really? That's how I feel about you, and in the best possible way. Like, I am really proud of all that you've done, because when I first saw you in Calgary as the ring announcer guy, and here you are now, you know, 25 years later, doing all the things that you've done, it just goes to show when you have the perseverance and the wherewithal and the gumption is such a 1920s word, but you really went for it. You know, all the stuff, you know, we'll talk about your bands that you're in as well, all the rock and roll stuff. I mean, that takes a lot of work. And I think because I haven't seen you in a long time, when I started hearing reports of Rebel Starbuck wins the Smash Championship in Japan from Tajiri, and Rebel Starbuck beats, you know, Michael Kovac or all these different guys that I know, I was like, wow, he really did it. And that's really, really cool to me, man, because there's not a lot of guys that you meet when you're first starting out who actually go the distance.
Well, the thing is, you know, you're a man of faith, as am I, right?
Right.
You know, we believe in the good Lord upstairs and in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Now, the thing is that I give all the credit in the world to the fact that without the blessing of God Almighty and the fact that, you know, the Lord opens up doors for you. He opens up opportunity. And that's the one thing that the world at large doesn't understand. That everybody thinks about money, 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 money. Right. And it's not about money is a vehicle. It's a means to an end. And the thing is, what God does in your life is when you hand your life over to the good Lord above, is that he becomes a manager of your life in a way that he ordains your steps before you even take them. And that said, what I felt in my life, at least, is that when you got the blessing of God on you, man, anything is possible. Because if God's for you, nobody can be against you. It's biblical wisdom. And it holds itself to be true. You've seen it in your life. I know that for a fact. You know, and I'm so happy to Chris, honestly, to see your success, like not just in WWE and in Japan now, and like with AEW starting up and stuff. I mean, as an old friend, we used to go to the gym together sometimes. We used to listen to the heavy music and shit like that. And it's, you know, good memories. But I'm happy for you. I'm honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I'm not kissing your ass for any reason. I'm just saying that I'm honestly happy that you've gone out there and done all this stuff, because the thing is that you understand the significance of the serendipity and the blessing of the good Lord above.
You mentioned being old friends and meeting up so many years ago in Calgary. Let's talk about that. Like, I know you were in Calgary. Another, just give you a little background. You are basically a son of Finnish immigrants to Canada, hence the Finland connection. You are, you know, a Finn Canadian, and you end up in Calgary. And the first time I remember you was as a ring announcer. Kind of tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the scene in Calgary, kind of on the periphery, and how you were able to kind of get your start in your career in the same area that I did.
Actually, you remember wrong. You remember the first time we met? It was, I think, Etobicoke.
Really?
It's Etobicoke, Alberta. Yeah, you were on this. You were doing a tag team match. I think you were in the main event. But anyway, I forget who you're tagging with and who you're up against. But I think, was it promoted by Steve Gillespie and Randy Rudd? I think it was.
But weren't you the ring announcer for that?
No, I was the guy with the cameraman. I had gone to art college. I'd gone to art college and I had to take a camera course, and I had a friend there that I brought with me who's actually, he had more experiences like a lensman. But then I just took my camera that I had bought from, you know, for the school course and at the Alberta College of Art. I brought it with me. I just said that I was a camera, a photographer. and that's, you know, so I was at ringside, didn't know jack shit about photography, but I was taking pictures.
You know, it wasn't Etobicoke was in Ontario, but it was something like Rimby or some place in Calgary, like kind of a little ranch town.
Outside of Calgary.
Yeah, it was outside of Calgary. Like, I remember it was me and somebody, it was a tag team match Yeah. Ken Johnson, the illustrious, the guy who needed a name name change from the boring Ken Smith to more of a show business name, so he changed it to Ken Johnson.
Yeah.
So you started just as a photographer to kind of get involved in the scene, right?
Yeah, I just pitched myself. I think it was either to Ed Langley or Steve Gillespie, but I pitched myself as a photographer. I'm gonna, you know, come and shoot the show, and I think my pictures didn't turn out.
Well, that was back in the day when you had to take them and then take them to the drugstore after, and you never knew what you had. But I think, didn't you tell me that you went to Stu Hart's door? Like,
oh, hell yeah. I mean, I was a persistent son of a bitch. Because the thing is that, like, I was thinking, well, I'll give you a few stories here. But nonetheless, I mean, I called up Stu Hart. I got a hold of his number somewhere. I called him up and I introduced myself. I said, I'm an artist, right? Because, you know, I can draw, right? So
I'm a great artist.
Yeah. So I said that I'm an artist, right? And he said, we're all artists.
Were you trying to paint a picture of him or something, or you just wanted to?
No, I was thinking, what's my angle to get in the wrestling business, right? I mean, like, what are you going to tell somebody? You're 18, 19 years old looking to get in the business. I mean, how the hell are you going to get in?
Right.
So I was telling people I was an artist. Maybe I can draw pictures or whatever of the wrestlers for the weekly programs or something, or draw a portrait here or there or whatever, you know?
Right.
I'm just thinking, what's my angle? Why should anybody give a flying? But so... I told Stu. Well, anyway, Stu, come on down to the house. So I came down to the house. I sat at his kitchen table for a couple of hours there. He got up out of his chair towards the end and said, let me show you a sleeper holding. Got behind me and locked the sleeper on me. Good thing I turned my head to the side. Otherwise, he would have choked out.
And just so people know, this is Stu Hart, probably at, I'd say, late 60s.
Yeah, I don't know how old he was, but this would have been the year 1992.
Right. So he probably was early 70s at this point, still wanting to stretch you.
Oh, yeah. He was ambitious. I remember, I got a hold of, what was his name there? Tokyo Joe Daigo.
Yeah.
I got a hold of Tokyo Joe and I called him up and trying to get into the business through, like, you know, just, I was scouring for numbers, man. I was like, you couldn't stop me. I mean, I was going to get through somehow. And I called up Joe and I was like, you know, introduced myself as an artist. Yeah. This, that, and the other thing. He says, hey, give me a call after a year. Well, I put it down on my calendar for a year exactly for that day. I gave him a call after 1 year. I introduced myself. He didn't remember who I was. I reminded him. He said, fuck off.
Well, what were you supposed to do, though? Like, were you trying to get Tokyo Joe to train you?
Yeah, I was. I'm just thinking of like how to get like into the business, get to know some guys in the business, and maybe that way, you know, just work my way in somehow. I mean, I would have figured it out eventually, but I mean, yeah, I got a hold of Les Thornton. I got, you know, I walked up to Les Thornton's house, introduced myself, and he let me in, and we were watching American football downstairs and watching a bit of WCW, which he called, by the way, Gaga. He couldn't stand it. He was watching Marcus Alexander Bagwell, and he was like very critical of what he saw. He's like, you want to see real pro wrestling? Watch me and Tony Charles.
Right. So the end game, though, was always to become a wrestler. That's what you wanted to do.
Well, you know what? I come from a very meager family in terms of, my father is a Pentecostal minister of Finnish immigrant churches in Canada. That was my upbringing, right? I was born in 73. My parents moved to Canada in 72 from Finland. And we were always like, not just middle class, but lower middle class.
Right.
We were like scrounging to survive. There were times when there wasn't even enough like food in the house. My parents never let me know. But I come from a very, like, rather poor family in that way. So I kicked and scratched for every nickel and dime that I ever made. And I hustled, I busted my ass. I never thought I'd have money, enough money to get like trained pro wrestling. I just wanted to be part of the business. I just wanted to get in because I love wrestling.
Right.
So, eventually, well, then I ended up getting in, and Lance Storm was the first guy that like offered to train, because me and Lance became training partners in Calgary at this place called The Gym. I mean, as generic as it sounds, it was The Gym. And for 1 year, Lance and me were training partners. Three times a week, we'd go there and you know, hustle ass for about an hour and a half. And one day Lance says to me, he says, listen, I see the passion that you have for pro wrestling. And if you want, I'll train. And Lance never asked for a penny of my money, man.
Wow. Yeah.
And he trained me out of friendship. And it's funny that, like, nowadays, I even asked Lance to do an insert for my book when I wrote it a couple of years ago. You know, like, I finished it a couple of years ago. It was put out in May of 2017.
Right.
And anyway, the point being that Lance said that he just doesn't remember enough of our friendship to write anything, which I thought really, it was rather surprising. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I remember crystal clear. I mean, I'll be indebted to Lance for the rest of my life, because the thing is, Ed Langley, the promoter back then, hated my guts. You know Ed. You know, you remember Ed rather well.
Sure.
And Ed just disliked me with a passion. I don't know what his problem was, but he disliked me with a passion. And Carl Moffat ended up taking the book for a while, and then he brought me back. And then once he left, Ed, he just didn't want me there. Anyway, Lance, I said to Lance, he said that I've got this kid coming from Australia. He needs a training partner. If you want, I'll train you. So you'd be the training partner for this kid from Australia. So, okay, yeah, of course, I'll do it. Yeah, more than happy. And I said, there's only one problem. Ed Langley hates my guts. And what if Ed says no? Because it was at the Hart Brothers Wrestling School, so sure, to speak, of course, on the off season, yeah, at the Victoria Park Civic Center is where the ring was set up permanently. So, and Lance said that if Ed doesn't want you, I won't do it.
Hmm.
Which I thought was like, that's real friendship. I mean, that like back then, I mean, we were tight, you know. I mean, it's like, I still appreciate that to this day. And the thing is that, yeah, so Lance trained me out of the goodness of his heart as a friend, and Carl Moffat trained the green guys like once a week. I think it was like Wednesday nights or something. And he just took the guys that needed more like ring time and whatnot, and the young guys into the ring and ran them through what they needed to be run through. So that was my start in the wrestling business after, like, you know, starting as a ring announcer in the fall of 92.
Tell us about your first match that you ever had.
Yeah, it was me and Lance, January 7th, 1994. And it was exactly 7 minutes on the nose, man. Lance picked me up, dropped me with a power bomb and jackknife, pinned me. You know, so he floated over with a jackknife and pinned me with a bridge. 1, 2, 3. And the thing is, the boys in the back, they said that they clapped it up. They said, that was the second best match on the card, man. It was you and Beef Wellington in the main event, by the way.
Oh, wow. Night.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys had the best match. We had the second best match. So, I mean, I was more than taken with that adulation and applause.
Whose boots and tights were you wearing?
That was your brother. You gave me my first pair of wrestling boots, a pair of your old black ones. And then you lent me a pair of your old Sudden Impact tights, orange and white.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because, you know, you do this for such a long time. And it's one of those things that Ronnie James Dio told me. He goes, always give people their moment because you might not remember it, but they'll never forget it. Like, I have no recollection. I vaguely remember giving you my boots now that you say it. And they were the first pair of boots I ever had, like made of black leather, not patent, just normal black leather. And then those tights, and I had no idea that I lent you the tights until I was reading your book and I saw those pictures of your first match. And I was like, wow, that's so funny. You forget that stuff, you know?
Well, the thing is, it's like, you won't remember this either, but you remember like before you went to Smoky Mountain.
Yeah.
Actually, Lance had gone to Otto Wants to wrestle in Germany and in Austria for a bit there in 93.
Yeah.
But while he was there, he got a hold of me because, like I said, we were friends. And he said that, can you get a hold of Jim Cornette for me? He was interested in going to Smoky Mountain, getting his way into America, right?
Right.
And I worked out Jim Cornette's number. I called up Jim Cornette. Hello, my name is Mike. I'm calling on behalf of Lance Storm. He's an Austrian in Germany right now for Peter Wilkin. And and Otto Wands. And then, yeah, the Corny says to me, well, yeah, just have him send over a promo pack and blah, blah, blah. Then you won't remember this, but you got wind that I had been in contact with Corny on behalf of Lance. So you got a hold of me. You called me up and said, hey, can you give me Corny's number too?
Wow.
That was how you got your hookup with Corny, brother.
That is so funny, man.
That's not even in your book. That's not even in your lion's tail. I'm so fucking sour about that.
You said that. Okay, so now let's put it on the record for everybody, for the world to see. Probably more people will listen to this than read that book. So it was Mike who officially hooked me up with Jim Cornette and got me into Smoky Mountain. Because I'd forgotten about that because I'd sent something to Jim via your contact. And when Jim called me back, I think Jim called Lance and said, I got this other guy, Chris Jericho. Do you know him? I want to make you guys a team. And that's how I got to Jimmy, was from you, which, of course, like you said, no memory of that at all. So I will definitely give you full credit on the record 25 years later that it was Mike Maggiolatti that hooked me up with Jim Cornette. So thank you very much.
Hallelujah.
So how did you end up in Europe? You're talking about kind of being on the small time indies in Canada, and then going to Europe and kind of starting your career over there.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was June of 1996. There was a terrible recession in Eastern Canada. So, I mean, the economy was just crap.
And before you get into it, tell me the job that you had. What was the job? Screwing water bottle caps onto water bottles?
No, that was in Calgary. I was working for Alberta Bottled Water. I was driving like distilled water and spring water all around town, but different companies. It was actually, in 1992, it was the summer of 92. And my break, the person that facilitated my break into the wrestling business was Abu Wizal, who was one of the old managers of Stampede Wrestling for Karachi Vice, right?
Right.
And so I delivered bottled water one day to his company. It was a taxi company. He had these pictures, these black and white photos on the wall of Stampede wrestlers. And I asked him, why do you have pictures on the wall of like wrestlers? And he said, well, I used to be a manager for Stu Hart Stampede Wrestling. I said, what was your name? He said, Abu Wizal. And I said, oh. I said that, like, well, is there any wrestling right now in Calgary? Is there any company running? He says, no, but there's one starting up this fall if you want. And it was for Steve DeSalvo.
Right.
And Steve DeSalvo was running a realtor. He was a realtor at that time in Calgary. And he was working at this realty office. This is a funny story too, because I got a hold of Steve DeSalvo. So Abu Yassal gives me his number and I call him up. I introduce myself. And then I show up at his realty office, right? And he's pretty shocked to see that I show up, first of all. I got this briefcase in my hand. I got this briefcase. It's full of my artwork. And I'm sitting there. He sees me. It's okay. I wait. It's after hours. The shop is closed, man. It's like the office is closed down. Steve DeSalvo is sitting in his office. Everybody else has gone home. He doesn't want to take me. And I refuse to leave. So I'm sitting there until he actually, asks me to come into his office. Okay, what do you got? And then I walk in, I make my pitch. Yeah, I'm Mike. I do, I'm an artist. I'm looking to get in the wrestling business. I heard you're starting a new company. This, that, and the other thing. I can draw pictures of the wrestlers for your weekly programs and blah, blah, blah. And you know what? He didn't see that as being the pitch, but he took a chance on a hardcore mark. And what he heard was my voice.
Hmm.
And as God has gifted me with a good voice from my youth onward, he heard my voice. He said, okay, well, we'll make you a ring announcer. And when he said ring announcer, then, the first Rocky Mountain Pro TV taping that fall, they had some local Calgarian, some actor, TV actor come in and do like the color commentary with, I forget who else was doing. Steve DeSalvo himself was doing the commentary. And this actor was doing, I guess, like guest commentary of color, whatever he was doing. He didn't know jack shit. He was terrible. He was like, he was stinking up the joint. And DeSalvo, like, he lost his cool in the middle of the broadcast, in the middle of the run of the mill. And he gets rid of this guy in the middle of the thing. And he waves me over, come here. And then he puts me to commentate for the rest of the show. And that was my first show where I was ring announcer and first show as a color commentator.
And that got you involved in there.
And I was talking on top of him the whole time.
But at least you got that voice, right?
Yeah.
Steve DeSalvo always had the good lines, Stand up, Jim Davies. Oh, you are standing. So tell us how you ended up in Europe then and kind of starting the scene over there.
Well, the thing is that in 96, like I said, there was a shit recession, a real terrible recession in Canada, especially Eastern Canada. I guess Western Canada with the oil and stuff like that was better. But Eastern Canada, Ontario was the drizzling shits. And the thing is that my father, like I said, is a Pentecostal minister. So the thing is that my father was pastoring a church in Sudbury, Ontario at the time. I had moved back in early 1994 after my first match against Lance in Calgary. I'd moved back to back home because I decided to like take this course in a correspondence course in graphic arts and shit like that. And anyway, the thing is that it was, I was barely surviving in Calgary. Right. I was working at this bottled water company. I literally remember this as like brutal. I put the last $5 in my bank account into the gas tank just to get to work.
Right.
On payday, because I got paid on the first or the last day of the month, and also on the 15th. So every 2 weeks. And the thing is that I literally I had maybe like $6, and I put like $5 out of $6 out of my bank account. I had no money in my wallet into the bank, into my gas tank, just to get to work. And it's like, you can't live like that forever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, no.
So then I figured, okay, like, screw this. So I left Calgary, went back home for a bit. I figured I'd just go back and live with my parents for just a bit, and then, you know, move on with my life. But so I moved back in early 94, and I was there, you know, for a couple of years. And then I was working the indies, and I was taking these correspondence courses whatnot. And then my father, as a minister, he got this stomach bacteria. It's like a colic or cholera or whatever. I forget what it's called. But anyway, this bacteria in Florida. He was at this like winter conference thing in Florida, and he got nailed with some kind of bacteria there, and it screwed up his stomach and his system, so that he'd have the runs for like 1 year straight. And it, you know, if you've ever had the runs for any extended period of time, you know that it drains your body. Like you just dry up.
Right.
And he had that for every day of the week, 52 weeks a year for a year.
Hmm.
And he just couldn't, the doctors couldn't find a cure. They couldn't find out what was like, how to get this thing under control. My father burnt out, like he just burned out in his work as a pastor. He was working 6 days a week. One day a week, I think it was a Tuesday, he'd go out and just do some fishing or some hunting. Otherwise, he was like tied to the church for 6 days a week. And he just burned out. And he said that I'm going to go to Canada with my mom. You know, he was going to move for like, let's say, a half a year to a year, just try to recoup and have the doctors here try to figure out what was wrong with him. And then I thought to myself, with the recession, well, I was working part-time as this bakery delivery driver, like driving these like different bakery goods around town in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada, to different shops and whatnot, right? Grocery stores and convenience stores and whatnot. And anyway, I was making part-time pay, and I figured, well, I was living at home still, so I wasn't paying like rent. But if I would have had to pay rent on a part-time pay, I wouldn't be able to cut the bills. So I thought, well, what if I leave for Finland too? Because it wasn't like there were jobs on every street corner, because this was the recession. So I left and went with my parents to Canada in June of 96. Then I started my own business in October of 96. So I was a graphic artist. I started like as an illustrator, my own graphic arts business. And then I just suddenly, I realized I'm kind of stuck here. Mm-hmm. And then come 2003, in 2002, SmackDown got licensed to finish television. There's a channel called Sub TV, and they had Conan O'Brien and SmackDown. They were their top two programs on free national television, and SmackDown got like hugely popular at that time.
Right.
So in 2002, they came to Hartwall Arena in Helsinki. They damn near sold the place out. They had the main event was it Rey Mysterio and Edge against Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle. And anyway, that's when I realized you had about 10,000 people there. You can do some business here, man.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You got 10,000 people. Seems like people actually care about pro wrestling. And then I had this guy I got a hold of. His name was Patrick Pesola, and he's a Finnish guy. And he was like a kid of rich parents. And he had this ambition of being the Vince McMahon of Scandinavia. And anyway, he started, I pitched him the idea of this company called Valhalla Pro Wrestling. And that's in 2003, we started that. I was the booker and the matchmaker. I was the trainer. He was the promoter. He was the money man. But little did I know, he put everything on credit.
That's so typical.
he ran himself bankrupt in like 5 months. By the end of the year, 2003, he was completely bankrupt. His name was on the blacklist of businesses on the public register here in Finland.
So when you were doing your shows in Finland and starting, were people coming? Because you mentioned you had 10,000 people for the WWE shows. Was the independent scene, I mean, it's always hard at the start, but were there guys that wanted to be wrestlers that were any good? And were there people coming to see the shows?
Well, the first show we ran was this event called Culture Shock. And it was at the House of Culture in Helsinki. So we brought in Sabu against Shane Douglas on top. We had Kid Cash against AJ Styles for the TNA World Championship, NWA World Championship, 2 out of 3 falls on that show. We had Sonny Siaki here. We had some guys from Norway, you know, and a couple of Finnish guys that were like raw as green grass. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like it got a really good reception because we had this one guy, his name was Jussi Heikkilä. He was the PR guy for that. And this Patrick Pesola, the promoter, he had hired him to do the PR, so public relations and do the media stuff. And he got a fair bit of buzz going on. So I think we had about maybe 400, 500 people there that night, which was a pretty good start for an indie. It was a good start. And it was a TV production. We actually had like local television and we had it on a sports channel here in Finland, the broadcast of it with a couple of commentators who didn't know anything about anything. I mean, they were terrible. But anyway, then what happened was right after that show, he was in the black about 10,000 euro. Mm-hmm. So, and then, well, he had a show the next month called Baltic Brawl at even a bigger arena, which is the one where WWE is going to be running now May 10th here in Helsinki, called the Old Helsinki Ice Hall. And it holds 8,000 people. And he would have needed 5,000 tickets sold to break even.
Wow, right, right.
Yeah, so he brings in Shane Douglas. He brings in this Johnny Storm. He brings in the UK Pit Bulls. He's got some people on the card, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and he what he didn't do is he didn't pay his PR guy from the last gig. So then this Jussi Heikkilä guy who did the PR and the media, he refused to do anything. So Patrick ran these ads like at the bus stops all around the southern area of Finland. It cost for 1 week 44,000 euros for 1 week of advertising.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so that you understand why they would have had to draw like 5,000
people, of course,
to break even. Anyway, so the thing is that – but he like screwed up in the sense that he should have paid off the most important people that would have facilitated like public awareness for the event, and he refused to pay his PR guy. So this guy did nothing for the second event 1 month later. And it flushed, man. We had at 8,000 seats, we had 1,500.
Which isn't a bad crowd for an indie show.
No, but if you consider that just the ad run for the bus stops for 1 week was 44,000, I'd say that's a catastrophe.
Of course, and that's always the typical story about a first-time promoter in thinking if you just put a couple of posters on the wall that you're going to sell out a venue, and we both know that's not the case. Even with the big names that you had, it still doesn't make a difference because you're trying to break into the market and explain to people and show people what exactly pro wrestling really is.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And the thing is that, you know, by the way, on that show, you remember in WCW, you remember this guy called Alan Funk?
Yeah.
Alan was on that show. He damn near died here in Helsinki, man. Sonny Siaki gave him a split-legged moonsault in the opener out of the corner. Mm-hmm. He came down with his knee first on his orbital rim. He crushed his face. He was, I mean, there was blood spurting out of his eyes, out of his ears, out of his nose, out of his mouth. He was knocked completely near, damn near senseless. He walked his way out of the ring back to the dressing room. By the time I was on crutches at that time because I had broken my leg in Oslo, Norway in this match. I was still the booker, but still I hobbled backstage. I got there. The guy was hyperventilating. There's blood just pumping out like a piston, pumping air into his body, shooting blood out of his face. And he damn near died here in Helsinki that night.
His name was Kuiwi, right?
Kuiwi, that's right. Yeah,
that's brutal, man, when you get those injuries in a foreign country, no less.
They put him in the hospital. They restructure his face with metal discs and all that, like what they did to Brutus Beefcake. Same thing.
Wow. I mean, that's, you never want to see that happen to anybody at any wrestling show.
Meilahden oma poika, Nikko Maestro, kohtaa The Rebel Starbuckin 30 minuutin Iron Man -ottelussa. Starbuck, sä poisit mut haastajan listalta, erotit mut FCR Wrestling Omega Shown jälkeen, mutta nyt sä et pääse enää pakoon. Kävin nuorena katsomassa FCR Wrestlingin showta kisahallissa ja halusin olla seuraava Starbuck, mutta nyt tajusin, että voin olla jotain isompaa, sillä voin olla ensimmäinen Mikko Maestro.
Mikko Maestro, talvisota 13. Ja sä sanot, että sinä haluat ylittää sinun sankarisi. Sinä haluat, että sinusta tulee ensimmäinen Mikko Maestro. To be the man, you have got to beat the man.
What was the kind of the peak, or maybe it's now, of wrestling in Finland? Because, you know, we're talking before, actually, from native Finns. What was his name? Tony Holm. It was like Ludvig Borga. Was like the big Finnish star. But then you're saying when you come into Finland and start making a name for yourself, so you become synonymous with pro wrestling, did that help crowds? Like, what's the status of independent Finnish wrestling to this day?
Well, the thing is, I think that, like, for the longest time I ran this company, it's my brainchild, called FCF Wrestling. It's like short for Fight Club Finland, which is a name that I kind of took from Brad Pitt's Fight Club movie back in 99. But anyway, the thing is that, like, that's the sports club entity here in Finland. So, like, that's that I ran. I was the main booker and the boss of that from 2006 to about a couple of years ago. And during that time, like I said, because it's a nonprofit organization, it was pretty grassroots in the way that, like, we try to organize shows to the extent that we advertise what we thought was sufficient advertising. Little did we know that the money that we were putting into advertising was not sufficient at all. And now with my Slam Wrestling, I realize how much money I got to put just into the advertising. It's crazy. It's like handing over money, like hand over fist. It's crazy.
Right,
it's ridiculous. So, so the thing is that we never did that level, that amount of advertising with that FCF operation. So crowds at best were around 500 people, mm-hmm. which is okay. But the thing is that we never broke into the mainstream also, because public awareness, we still had people saying, oh, is there wrestling in Finland? You know, it's like people don't even know, which is, you know, strange, because we had it here since 2003. Now it's for 16 years. We have pro wrestling in this country, and there's still people in Helsinki who don't know.
Right.
Which proves that the marketing has not worked, and the money has not, you know, been sufficient for the marketing. So now with my Slam Wrestling, what I'm doing is that I'm outsourcing my PR. I'm paying out the ass for, like, different services, but it's an investment that I have to make to get this thing off the ground and put it into everybody's mind and into everybody's mouth. What is Slam Wrestling Finland, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's that initial investment you got to make your name. You got to spend money to make money.
Well, it's hard too, when you are trying to, you know, break a sport or break an activity or a show business, you know, genre, when people haven't grown up with it. You know, it's like trying to sell hockey in Miami, for example, or Nashville, or some of these places, Phoenix, where people don't grow up with that sport. So it's harder to get them into it. And when you're talking once again about the Nordic countries that haven't grown up with pro wrestling, really, it's probably harder to break it to the mainstream just by proxy of the fact they don't really have that legacy with it.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like in Britain, they've got this, like,
years, like, decades.
Yeah, like dozens and dozens of years of pro wrestling. Back, you know, Big Daddy and the Marty Joneses and, you know, the Fit Finlays and everything, World of Sport. But, like, even in Germany, you wrestled for Otto Wans and Peter Williams. You know, like, they had this huge, they had a tradition. You know, they had built that business for decades. So in Finland, it's been here for 16 years. You know, we built it from the ground up. Same thing in Norway, same thing in Sweden, same thing in Denmark. It hasn't been here. It hasn't been, it's not been a staple. And largely, by and large, in Finland, people view sports to be a holy thing. So, like, pro wrestling is a bastardization of sport in the way that people look, it's this fake wrestling. They have a name for it here called show wrestling. I hate it too, right? Because it's professional. What I do is pro wrestling. It's not, I don't, you know, there are showman elements, but what I do is pro wrestling. And I have that pride. But they have the term for it, which is like a national term called show wrestling. And people have this preconception that it's just a show, nothing more. You know, it's like it, nothing hurts. It's just acrobatics and all this. And you have to reprogram that audience. You have to re-educate them. It's like Bill Watts said that, you know, you have an obligation, or it's like as a promoter, as a company, you are the one offering to the audience what it is that you want to present.
Right.
And that's what I'm doing with Slam Wrestling. It's a re-education process now. I'm not presenting show wrestling. I'm presenting pro wrestling.
Well, and like you said, that's something that you have to teach to those people, which you have been at least for to a certain extent. But I want to, you know, let's talk a little bit too about your Japanese career, because that's where I really started hearing about you a lot. Because obviously, you know, like you're talking about the wrestling in Finland and you're working hard and it's there, but it's not so much in the mainstream as far as wrestling media. Whereas, you know, you pick up the Wrestling Observer and you're reading about, you know, Smash Wrestling Tajiri, everyone knows Tajiri, and the champion is Rebel Starbuck. And that's when I was like, is that the same guy? Really? Mike's the champ there? That kind of really gave you a lot of credibility for people that didn't really know what you were doing or who you even were.
Absolutely. I credit Tajiri as being the guy that believed in me to open the door for me to come to Japan. I booked him once. I often tell people this, that, like, and this is the serendipity of the good Lord above once again. I mean, it's a, there, you can't bypass it. You can't like discredit it.
Yeah.
You can't ignore it. The thing is that I brought Tajiri to Finland in 2010. It was February 10th of 2010 for our biggest wrestling show of the year. It's called Winter War. And I made a deal with this one restaurant chain in Finland called SK Restaurants. Is like, so it's the initials of the guy that basically is the big boss. Anyway, they own several restaurants in Finland, nightclubs and stuff like that. And we ran this Winter War event at their venue, one of their venues in Helsinki. And I made a deal with them that they bankrolled part of that event. So they gave me a budget. And they said that within this budget, get us a main star that people would know, that would sell tickets, that would have, like, you know, so some potential to draw people. So I drafted up a bunch of names in 2010 that were like on the free agent, you know, circuit that would have been plausible. And I believe it or not, it boiled down to a choice of either Honky Tonk Man or Tajiri.
Wow.
And I'm so glad that I chose Tajiri. Anyway, I got a hold of Tajiri through his website. It was a JapaneseBuzzsaw.com at the time. I made the pitch. He bit. Didn't know who I was from Adam, man. But he bit. He figured, I want to go to Finland. Never been here before, I guess. And I tell you, he came here. The first day that he was here, when he landed, his stomach was completely messed up. Somehow, I guess the bacteria is different from Japan and Europe. And he ate some local food and his stomach got messed up. And I was his chauffeur. I mean, as the promoter, I shipped him all around town and treated him the best that I could. I didn't have money for like taxis here and there and everywhere. So anyway, when he was sick, when he came in, I brought him to a Japanese restaurant, made sure that I brought him to some place where, you know, somebody made like Japanese meals for him and stuff like that. Even someone's home. And he was so taken by the hospitality. He was so taken by the fact that I went out of my way to make him feel like accommodated and to make, you know, to do my best on his behalf, that when it came match time and he said, what's your finisher? You know, I didn't, you know, it's like, I had to expect to basically just, you know, to do the honors that night. But he asked me, what's your finisher? And yeah, I told him what it was. And we did business that night for over 20 minutes. And after that match, he said that he went on social media in Japan, on Twitter and everything else. And he said, there's this guy in Finland. He's got so much charisma that I'm going to bring this guy to Japan. And that was my thing is that for some reason, like in Japan, Tajiri once told me, you know, we were on this tour with Smash. between it was between Osaka or was between Nagoya and Tokyo. I think it was somewhere after Osaka. We're coming back with a bus. We're at this roadside stop, and Tajiri takes me aside. It was like 2011 or two, I think it was, yeah, 2011. He took me aside. He said, "Starbuck, everyone here likes you because you're straight." I think what he was saying is that I was like, you know, honest. I had integrity.
A straight shooter.
Right? Yeah, a straight shooter, right? I didn't play no games. No, there was no politics, no nothing. And it's the truth. I never did. I never played that. I never played that game. So, and the thing is that I realized that, you know, I had this favor with the office. I was the hookup guy. By the way, I was the foreign agent for Smash and for WNC, which was the company that followed Smash with Tajiri at the helm. I was his foreign agent. I booked all of the foreign talent, more or less, for that company.
Right.
Yeah. So the thing is that I was able to, like, get into a position with the company to become valuable to them because I took care of business and I handled my business well. And I think that, like, I asked one time, it was the production office of the company that did the Smash TV shows. They also did the All Japan, by the way. Mm. It was called Broncos. And then I also asked one of my good friends, Dr. Hiroaki Terasaki, who is now one of the medical staff for New Japan Pro Wrestling. I asked these guys and some other people, like, why do you think I'm so popular in Japan? Because, like, in the year 2010, I debuted it was July 24th, I debuted. And inside of a half a year, by the time Weekly Pro Wrestling Magazine did their year-end poll and they did the gallops with all the readers, I was voted in the top five gaijin in, like, out of all companies. I was number five in that year.
And let me just say, just for people that are listening to this, I've never been nominated as a top five gaijin. I mean, this is something that Kenny Omega, AJ Styles, Bob Sapp, you know, those type of guys would get voted into that area. So for you to get in there for working for basically an independent company shows just how much of an impact you had there.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was nuts. You know, like, and the thing is, the Smash, they out of, let's say, 30 somehow, like, relevant companies inside of Japan, inside of, like, the period of, like, one and a half years, they rose from, like, nothing to the, like, the fifth or sixth biggest company in the country. And the thing is, I was their main gaijin during that rise. I was the adversary and the main rival of Tajiri. And so the thing is, anyway, my point being here that one day Tajiri also said to me that, you know, when people in Japan pay their hard-earned yen once, twice a week to go and see something, like, just to like, make, you know, to a detour from the mundane reality of their lives, they don't want to see regular Joe Schmoes just like them. What they want to see is King Kong versus Godzilla.
Of course, right, sure.
So they want to see something special they're not going to see every day. And then I asked these people, like the Broncos production company that did the TV, and I asked my friend Dr. Hiroaki Terasaki, people like that. I said, why do you think I'm so popular? Why is Starbucks so popular in Japan? They thought about it for a second, and the answer amongst everybody was synonymous. You know what it was? They said charisma. You're the untouchable one.
Right.
For some reason, it's like, I'm not the biggest. You know, I'm only 180 tall, right? You know, I'm not like 100 kilo. I'm not the biggest. I'm a natural. I don't juice. I'm not the greatest wrestler out there. I'm not a high flyer. I'm not Rey Mysterio. Mm-hmm. I'm all around pretty good at what I do. I'm like this Bret Hart, Ted DiBiase, Million Dollar Man style of wrestler, from like a throwback, but I have a connection. I have this presence, this body language, this, because I believe what I do and I'm passionate about it. And it connects in some strange way with the Japanese mentality.
But I mean, like you said, you have that style, kind of the no nonsense style, also strong style, which is, you know, very important. And plus Tajiri has great charisma too. So you have to find somebody, you know, whether it's like, I don't know, just throwing a name out, like when it was The Rock versus Jericho, and The Rock was such a great baby face, you need a heel with great charisma to go against that. So I can see you and Tajiri having, you know, a lot of great chemistry there. Let me ask you a quick question. You did so well there. And like I said, this is not just you tooting your own horn. I've heard about this and seen a lot of it. What happened when Tajiri's company went out of business? Was there no other offers from any of the other companies over there to continue working there?
The business changed. Like in 2013, about 2013, 2014, the business took a drastic downturn in the sense that, I'm not sure if you know this, but we had this new slew of Gaijin, like young boys, I'll call them what they are. They're marks. Is what they did was they would pay their own 3-month visa to enter Japan. They'd pay their own flights. They'd work for next to nothing or then for free, sleep on the dojo floors just to say on social media that I work in Japan.
Right. Sure.
So you had these kids coming in and if you've got this offer being made like across the board. And, you know, the first company to really do these things that they call the world tryouts was 01. Mm-hmm. And that was the deal, is that these guys would fly themselves in on this world tryout basis. You know, the company pays them a nominal fee and they take a look at them. Hardly any of them are like ever brought back, of course, because it's just a way to make some money off these guys and get some free work. But anyway, the point being that once you make a name for yourself, as you know, you can't go back. You know, you're a prostitute. You're not even a prostitute. You're a slut because you're giving it away for free. Right. So you can't do it. So once you've been there and, you know, they've paid for your hotel, they've paid to bring you in. They've invested in you. They brought your public perception up and everything like that in front of their audience. You're worth something. So therefore, after that, you can't go and just work for peanuts or work for free. And you have to have that professional pride because the name of the game is professional wrestling.
Sure.
So I went there and once that deal closed in Tajiri, he was finished with that WNC because he moved on to Wrestle One with Keiji Muto and brought some of the guys over and stuff. He said to me, by the way, Tajiri wrote me, he said, see you in WNC. Because, I mean, we were tight, man. Even to this day, mm-hmm. me and Tajiri, tight. And he said, we'll see you in WNC. Anyway, he was made the booker there for a while too in WNC. But what happened was the money fell out. Now, as you know, New Japan is the only company in all of the country of Japan that has a healthy financial backing. They have that card company that bankrolls.
Bushiroad, yeah.
Right, right. So which is great, because the thing is that they can put, like, you know, their advertisements all over the Tokyo metro stations, and, you know, that costs a lot of money, and it's like it's a drop in the pan for them. But all these other companies literally, and I've heard this time and time and time again, they're all living hand to mouth. The money is not there. The sponsors are not there. And the guys that are working Japan, the main gaijins that are there right now, more or less, they have personal sponsors that make it possible for them to enter the country and do what they do. It's not like the companies are paying, like the wrestling companies are paying the bulk of their expense. It's they have personal sponsors. So you've come to this stage where, like, what you gonna do? The business has changed. These young marks, they're coming working for free, and then you're left without because there's no money anymore.
Were you just there? Weren't you just in Japan recently?
Yeah, I was. This past September, I worked for Jimmy Suzuki's Tokyo Championship Wrestling. Those people remembered me after 4 years. Man, I came back, and it was like you know, King Midas freaking returning to the throne. It was amazing. Those people, the magic was there the second I stepped out, and that with Tajiri, it was a tag match. It was a main event. They had Sabu and Masato Tanaka and Atsushi Onita and people like that on the card. Well, you know what? They put us as the main event.
You versus?
Yeah, the tag team match. Me and this guy called Utamaro against Tajiri and Yusuke Kodama.
So is this something that you're going to continue to go to Japan when the time is, when you get the right offers for it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I mean, I'd love to go to Japan for the rest of my life because I've never been treated so well as I've been treated in Japan. I mean, it's like, you know, as you know, when they like you there, when they love you, you are treated like royalty. I mean, you can do no wrong. Just make sure you don't screw up. Put it that way.
Right. Well, exactly. And treat the business with respect, and you'll get, and if you have that fighting spirit, you'll get the respect, you know, thrown back at you. So as we wind down here, I got a couple more things. I wanted to hear your philosophy on the psychology of wrestling, because it's very interesting to read your mindset on it in the book.
Well, I'll tell you what. for me, the worst thing that anybody can say to me is that, yeah, you're just a fake wrestler.
Right.
You know, ever since I've been young, ever since I've been a fan, you know, all of us are fans, even to this day, we wouldn't be in this business unless we were. So the thing is that, I mean, even if it's a job, I still love it. And for me, it's a matter of pride. I'm in the make-believe business. I make believers out of people. So it's like Johnny Valentine said back in the day.
Hold on a second. That's great. I'm in the make-believe business. I make believers out of people. Love that.
That's correct. That's so correct. Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. So Johnny Valentine, Greg Valentine's father, said back in the day that I can't make you believe professional wrestling is real, but I sure as hell can make you believe that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Ole Anderson said back in the day too, that it's like, if you can watch any match on the card, but then watch my match. If you see any bullshit in my match, I'll give you your money back.
Right.
And that's the pride that I have in my work. So I'm not a high spot guy. I'm not like, I don't do things that discredit the credibility of this thing that we call professional wrestling. I've had so many people. I had Miles Zerno, you know, Miles Zerno, yeah, out of the old CWA. When I took the European title, the Top Catch European title off of Michael Kovac, it was a tournament final in Wismar, Germany, back in 2011. Miles Zerno was sitting in the audience, and he said to Michael Kovac after that match, "Were you guys shooting?" Because it sure as shit looked like it. And if you could fool one of the boys like that, what do you think the people are seeing?
Well, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, when you can work the boys, you know you've got the people for sure.
Well, that's the whole thing. So, like, for me, I've had so many people, when I throw a punch, that's one of my proudest suits is the fact that I'm a great puncher. I really am. I'm a good talker. I'm a really good puncher. So the thing is that when I've thrown punches, I've had guys that are friends of mine, guys that are cameramen, taking like pictures from, like, let's say a meter and a half away, saying it looked like you're just murdering the guy. It's like you can hear the knuckles cracking on the skull. That's the pride that I have. I'm not hurting the guy, you know, intentionally, and he's completely fine afterwards. But the thing is that I do it in a way that I make believers out of people, because the thing is this, like Terry Funk said in his book, More Than Hardcore, he said that when it looks like I'm hurting, you got to understand I am hurting. When it looks like I'm going crazy, you got to understand I am actually going crazy. And that's the thing that I live by, that when I step in there, for me, it becomes 100% real in that ring.
Which is one of the reasons why you've been so successful in a yep. lot of different things. I wanted to talk to you quickly about all the bands that you've been in. There's been so many good ones, from Stoner Kings to I can't remember what's the beginning with an H? Hallelujah? No, what's it called?
No, Hallowed.
Hallowed, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was my first band back in 99.
It's interesting to me that the one that you've had the most success with is Crossfire, which is a Southern rock band from Finland. Which seems very strange that, you know, it's not from Jacksonville, Florida or Mobile, Alabama. It comes from the southern redneck shores of freaking Helsinki or whatever. I thought that was kind of an interesting dichotomy there.
It's actually originally from Fort Worth.
Really?
Yeah. Back in 1991, our drummer and our original guitarist started the band as a blues band back in 91. And they did the club circuit in Florida. Yep. And then they migrated here around the turn of the century.
So you guys have done a lot of stuff with Crossfire, and you're still with them at this time, right?
Yeah, actually, right now we're recording a remake of Michael Hayes' Bad Street USA. And I can tell you, it's a lot better than the original, man.
So last couple questions for you. What's your end game for the new company? Like, is this something you want to do on a regular basis, slam wrestling, or do you want to just do it as a one and done and see how it goes?
No, I plan on actually becoming a Baltic promoter. As my, like I said, I'm 45 years old right now, and life goes on, man. And the thing is, you have to be involved with the things that your heart burns for. Otherwise, it's going to be stress, stress, stress. When you do the things that you love, it's called passion. When you're involved with things that you don't care about, you have to immerse yourself in those things, it's called stress. I'd rather have passion than have stress in my life. So therefore, I want to expand with the pro wrestling ventures into Estonia, into Latvia, even over into Sweden, and why not even into like St. Petersburg, Russia, man. The thing is that like for me, it's I need the challenge. I'm the kind of guy that I love the challenge. I want to step up the plate, and I want to immerse myself in worthwhile things, that when it comes time for me to die, when my mortality is up, my time is up, I can look back on my life and say that, thank you, Lord, I had an incredibly rewarding and fulfilling life because I immersed myself in things of value. So that's my end game. I want to make this into a sales service that I can sell. I'm not looking to promote myself, to be honest with you. I'm looking to sell wrestling content to clubs, to event organizers, to festivals all around the place, custom tailored on demand as an all-star service. Customer gets to choose what kind of talent he wants to see. I can get you talent from all around the world.
Is this something that people worldwide can watch the show, or you haven't moved into that yet?
I'm looking right now into a platform that would be like a streaming platform. You pay, let's say, a nominal fee of, let's say, €5, whatever it would be, $5 to access the stream and then watch. I'm looking into that right now. So I time will tell, but it's I'm working on it.
Well, listen, man, like I said, with all the stuff you've accomplished, I'm not going to say that you won't get that done. You probably will for sure. Last question for you, man. What's your favorite match that you've ever had, if you had to pick a couple?
Well, geez, I think like one of the best was when I dropped the FCF championship to Tajiri, the 22nd of November, 2010 at JCB Hall in Tokyo. We were the main event. We damn near sold the place out. We had more people with Smash in that arena than any other company in Japan, including New Japan. We drew more people to that venue with us as the main event, where I did the honors for him that night. And that actually had my sixth career concussion in that match. But anyway, that was one of my favorites. Then I would say a match in 2005 with Steve Corino in Helsinki. It was just like, you saw that back in the day. You actually sent me, I think I sent you that. You sent some comments to me actually about that one. But that was one of my favorites too. And there's been so many of them, to be honest with you. Yeah, but there's a couple right there for you.
Well, man, like I said, it's cool to me that you're doing all this stuff. And, you know, we started together. And, man, I'm super proud of you and all the stuff you've accomplished, because that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show and talk about your book and talk about you. I want people to know Rebel Starbuck. So you're not just the most well-traveled, well-known wrestler that people don't know in North America. And I think that'll change with all the things that you're doing now in the Baltic area. Now you're a promoter, man. It's Vince McMahon, Tony Khan, and Mike Maggiolati, Rebel Starbuck.
Hey, bring me over to that AEW. Let's do some business there, brother.
Hey, do me a favor quickly. I love the Finnish language. Finish off by giving me a little Finnish promo.
Kuulkaa nyt ihmiset. Tämä on Chris Jerichon podcasti. Talk is Jericho. Minun nimi on Michael Maijalahti, the Rebel Starbuck. Ja minä kutsun teidät Slam Wrestling Finlandin megalaunchiin 22.3. Sirkuksessa Helsingissä. Ostakaa Ticketmasterin kautta lippunen nyt. NYT nyt. Perkele! There you go.
Awesome stuff, man. Great talking to you, brothers. Keep in touch and hopefully get a chance to see each other again soon.
All right. God bless you, Chris. Thank you so much.
God bless you too, brother. Thank you, man.
Starbucks Slam Wrestling is putting on the mega launch event in Helsinki, Finland on March 22nd at the Circus. Follow them on Facebook for information on how you can get tickets to this event. It's Slam Rest. That's Slam WRES on Facebook. And don't forget Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Part 2, the second wave. It's selling out fast. We were over 75% sold out in a month. It took us 7 months to get there last time. So if you want to go, don't you dare miss it. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com to book your cabin now. We are setting sail again next year, January 20th to the 24th in 2020. Why is there so many 20s? Because this vacation is going to be 20 times better than any other vacation you've ever had. And I want you to be there with us. There's a huge lineup, so many more to be announced. But so far, I'm the master of ceremonies. AEW is already on board, All Elite Wrestling. Fozzy is playing. Brad Williams is going to be the host of the cruise. He was the hit last year. Vicky Guerrero, this year, is a special guest cruise director. Bruce Jingles will be doing some stand-up, a hot young guy that we just found here on the cruise. You're going to love him. Beyond the Darkness is back. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis back to scare the pants off you. It's going to be amazing. DDP doing live DDP yoga workouts. Then we got the NWO, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Sean Waltman will be there. Jake the Snake Roberts on board. Farewell to Fear already signed on to rock the ship this year as well. We toured with them a few months ago on the last Fozzy tour in Canada. They were great. Don't forget so many others to be announced. It's going to blow your mind how many great, great talents we have on board. Rubik's Cube is going to be there, the world's best 80s tribute band. These guys are great. Steve Brown and PJ Farley from Trickster in the band. Joey Casado from ZO2. They are a great rock and roll band. So much coming up. And we got another big announcement on Thursday. more Hall of Fames and great Hall of Famers, great rock and roll bands. So much coming up. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. You're going to love it. And trust me, you do not want to miss this. Don't forget Fozzy opening for Iron Maiden September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium. We've got lots of stuff coming up with Fozzy. Don't forget, we got a little bit of a mini run coming up, getting out of the studio, as we've been saying. We're playing on May 15th, Greenville, South Carolina at the Firmament. May 16th, Greensboro, North Carolina at Cone Denim. May 17th, Virginia Beach, Virginia at the Lunatic Luau. And May 18th in Camden, New Jersey for the great, great station WMMR, the WMMR Barbecue. We're going to be there. So come check it out. Nita Strauss is opening those first couple shows. So go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket info and VIP info. And that's about it. All right. Speaking of Iron Maiden. On Friday, Classic Album Clash returns, and this time it's Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast versus Power Slave. I got a great, great panel. Metal expert Lizzie Borden, Talk Is Jericho alumni. Solo Cup Jeff, Talk Is Jericho alumni. Hopefully he'll stay awake this time. And of course, Brian Slagle, the founder of Metal Blade Records and a total Iron Maiden fanatic, almost as much as I am. They will be joining us to debate these two classic albums. The Classic Album Clash returns on Friday. Until then, have a great week. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. And don't forget about Mega Launch. All right, Rebel Starbucks Slam Wrestling is putting on the Mega Launch event in Helsinki, Finland on March 22nd at the Circus. Follow them on Facebook for information on how you can get tickets to this event. It's Slam Rest. That's Slam, WRES on Facebook. And don't forget Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Part 2, the second wave. It's selling out fast. We were over 75% sold out in a month. Took us 7 months to get there last time. So if you want to go, don't you dare miss it. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com to book your cabin now. We are setting sail again next year, January 20th to the 24th in 2020. Why is there so many 20s? Because this vacation is going to be 20 times better than any other vacation you've ever had. And I want you to be there with us. There's a huge lineup, so many more to be announced. But so far, I'm the master of ceremonies. AEW is already on board, All Elite Wrestling. Fozzy is playing. Brad Williams is going to be the host of the cruise. He was the hit last year. Vicky Guerrero, this year's a special guest cruise director. Bruce Jingles will be doing some stand-up, a hot young guy that we just found here on the cruise. You're going to love him. Beyond the Darkness is back. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis back to scare the pants off you. It's going to be amazing. DDP doing live DDP yoga workouts. Then we got the NWO, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Sean Waltman will be there. Jake the Snake Roberts on board. Farewell to Fear already signed on to Rock the Ship this year as well. We toured with them a few months ago on the last Fozzy tour in Canada. They were great. Don't forget, so many others to be announced. It's going to blow your mind how many great, great talents we have on board. Rubik's Cube is going to be there, the world's best 80s tribute band. These guys are great. Steve Brown and PJ Farley from Trickster in the band. Joey Casado from ZO2. They are a great rock and roll band. So much coming up. And we got another big announcement on Thursday. More Hall of Fames and great Hall of Famers, great rock and roll bands. So much coming up. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. You're going to love it. And trust me, you do not want to miss this. Don't forget Fozzy opening for Iron Maiden September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium. We've got lots of stuff coming up with Fozzy. Don't forget, we got a little bit of a mini run coming up, getting out of the studio, as we've been saying. We're playing on May 15th, Greenville, South Carolina at the Firmament. May 16th, Greensboro, North Carolina at Cone Denim. May 17th, Virginia Beach, Virginia at the Lunatic Luau. And May 18th in Camden, New Jersey for the great, great station WMMR, the WMMR Barbecue. We're going to be there. So come check it out. Nita Strauss is opening those first couple shows. So go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket info and VIP info. And that's about it. All right. Speaking of Iron Maiden, on Friday, Classic Album Clash returns. And this time it's Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast versus Power Slave. I got a great, great panel. Metal expert Lizzie Borden, Talk Is Jericho alumni. Solo Cup Jeff, Talk Is Jericho alumni. Hopefully he'll stay awake this time. And of course, Brian Slagle, the founder of Metal Blade Records and a total Iron Maiden fanatic, almost as much as I am. They will be joining us to debate these two classic albums. The Classic Album Clash returns on Friday. Until then, have a great week. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. And don't forget about Mega Launch.